Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the last, I've already messed up. Welcome back to the last bus stop. I am your host today. Yes, me. Finally, I have the power. LSCLs. Joined by the one and only Tanner, also known as Tanner Knows Ball on Twitter. But please make sure to follow our socials on Tanner Talks Soccer on Twitter.
All platforms.
And Instagram. And TikTok. Is there anything else? What else?
Yeah, you can subscribe to our website as well.
There. Forgot that one too.
Yeah.
First time hosting, guys. Okay, let's go straight into the events on the weekend. The title race. We had another battle at the top of the Premier League. This time at the Etihad. Not as exciting as we saw a few weeks ago at Anfield, but the result was the same, all square. But Liverpool were really the winners of the contest, and they are now 2 points clear with 9 to go. I'm celebrating behind my camera. But what did you think of the game, Tanner? And good point for Arsenal or an opportunity missed?
Well, it's, goodness me, it's difficult. Arsenal going away at the Etihad, of course they had a singular point advantage over City. Going into that, I feel like above all, like we would love to be ruthless, you know, as fans. But above all, I think Arsenal going there and saying we shouldn't lose this, because no matter how you want to spin it, Arsenal are ahead of City. So They know we're going away at City. Like if they win it, it's beautiful. It's perfect. It's lovely. It's what they would like. But they know above all that they shouldn't lose that, because they have the advantage. It's almost like if things are maintained the way they are and we go on to win all the remaining games, it's like we still have an advantage of them. Sadly, this time, there's another party, which is Liverpool Football Club. And, you know, you're also looking over your shoulder as well, looking at their results as well. So there's too many parties involved, to be honest, and that just makes it more difficult. I feel it's an all right point for Arsenal. 150% it's not magnificent, but it's an all right point for Arsenal. There's still a lot of football left to be played, and losing would have put them third in the title race right now. At the moment they are second, but they're still like sizably and incredibly difficult fixtures, but difficult fixtures left for all teams involved. So there's still a lot of chances to drop points. And if everyone thinks they're just going to be winning, like, all the games on the spin and this game is what decides it. That's not true. Points will still be dropped.
Do you know what? That takes me way back, because I remember in the 18-19 season and Gary Neville and Carragher were like, there's no way Liverpool and City are going to win all their games. And they did. And Liverpool lost by a point. Do you remember?
I do.
They were like, this is where they're going to drop points. And they just won every single game. So if we get that, which I would love, everyone winning every single game, then that would be crazy. But I'm with you.
It's certainly doable.
It is.
It's certainly doable.
Because it's the business end of the season and everyone is desperate. I mean, those three teams are desperate.
Exactly.
But I think what's interesting...
All teams are going to Tottenham and United, right? Or at least play against Tottenham and United. Only Man City. Yeah, Man City are not. But they play Tottenham. They play Tottenham still, yeah.
Tottenham are their kryptonite. Like, I don't know what it is with that club. Home, away, league, Champions League.
Yeah.
They have their number. It doesn't matter which manager. Really, Even Nuno got a win. Do you remember? Like, It's actually insane. Wow. Tottenham one more time.
There's something going on.
One last
dance. Yeah.
But
don't say that to Tottenham. No, in Tottenham, they have a job to do. Yeah, but they're trying to get in the Champions League as well, you know. So
that's true.
These fixtures are, like, of course, like, we are going for the title, but for Tottenham fans as well, it's not a nothing fixture where they just want to win it for fun or to just, like, decide the fun or,
absolutely,
I don't know, spoil someone else's title race, you know. They have massive stakes involved, so they would need to win these games as well.
For sure. And will Arsenal be kicking themselves because they've got the best head-to-head out of Liverpool and City, got 4 points from each block of fixtures for both of those teams. And you're thinking, how on earth are they not top? Like, it's crazy. It's actually insane.
Yeah.
And
it
that's the craziness of the league, because, I mean, they've looked so consistent and good, and yet you still feel, I don't know if it's just me, but I still feel that Liverpool and City, we haven't seen their best stuff, but Arsenal, we very much are seeing them at their best. So it'll be interesting with 9 games to go if that changes, or if we see Liverpool and City start to do what we know they can do, because they're missing players. They're going to get some of those players back. Big players. Big players. So it'll be really interesting. But I want to ask you about Mr. Kevin De Bruyne. Because since that Newcastle game, all those months ago, he's been quite quiet. What do you make of his comeback to the Premier League since then?
Well, to be honest, like, he came back against Newcastle with a bang, you know, got the World War token in the cups as well, domestic cups. He's had some, you know, the one where he gave 4 assists to Haaland in the Champions League as well, here and there. But, like, altogether, it's not been, like, he's been good, right? He's been good. You know, he's Kevin De Bruyne, he's a very good player, so he's been good. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I guess you're asking this question in relation to probably all the shouts he's getting right now, and you know he's going to get at the end of the season.
Absolutely.
Irrespective of the fact that he's missed most of it, and that since coming back, there's not been consistency from him. So he's had the performances, but there's not been, like, an insane consistency. I feel like it's just what it is. Like, you know, he's been good. He's had some quite good games. You know, he's had some good games. He's racked up his assist numbers. He's been good in general, to be honest. But, you know, when, you know, the conversations De Bruyne is constantly put in, irrespective of whatever. Remember the season when he even won the PFA Player of the Year? He wasn't even the best player in that City team. And his second PFA Player of the Year, you know, he was also out injured a lot. And it seemed very, like, it seemed funny, to be honest, you know. Like, there was no one that was giving it to him, literally, in terms of, even look at the football fan discourse. Even City fans presented, like, the likes of Diaz and Gundogan and the likes above him, you know, and possibly even Rodri, you know, that season. And you had Harry Kane, you had, like, Bruno Fernandes. Just, those were the names that people were hearing, and he just came up to win it. So if you're talking in relation to, like, possibly sweeping up individual awards. Like, he should have been there. No, that's quite no. But if I'm talking about, yeah, just a guy coming back and having some top performances, yes, he's had that, but there's not been real consistency. If you also look at the games against Liverpool and Arsenal, it's not been his greatest showing. Against Liverpool, he got the assist from the corner again to give John Stones the ball to score. It was a very smart routine. Mm-hmm. Good stuff, to be honest. Pretty. Maybe you would ask more from him outside that and feel like he should have had more of an impact on the game. But I mean, you know, if he got an assist that, you know, put City up and was the goal, eventually they were able to get them a point at Anfield. You don't want to be too critical, you know. So yeah, that's just how I feel about him. But in no way should he be around conversations, you know. I'm not going to criticize him or anything. I'm not going to give him that, oh, he's not been like bad, I'm going to say try to start some agendas or nothing. No, but he shouldn't be around conversations come the end of the season, irrespective of what City going to win.
He's for sure being below standards, but knowing Kevin De Bruyne, he can step it up at any opportunity. And I wouldn't bet against him doing that exactly that. But with nine games to go to,
yeah,
some big fixtures. I'll read out some key ones for each team. So Liverpool still have to go away to United. Still have to go away to Everton. They've got West Ham away, Fulham away, Man City. Slightly easier fixtures, but I would say Tottenham away, Villa at home. Luton? Nah, forget it. Fulham away again. Arsenal, a bit more interesting. Tottenham away. United away. The Twitter rivalry. Man United versus Arsenal. So, based on those fixtures, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Who takes
it? I think based on those fixtures, so Arsenal have to go Tottenham away and Man United away.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Liverpool too as well.
Yep.
So, quite frankly, I feel like Man City, I expect Manchester City to win all of their remaining games, if I'm being honest with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But the, like, should I say the advantage Liverpool has is having a superior goal difference and also being 3 points ahead, which means that Liverpool could possibly drop points and still be... I still have an advantage of Man City.
Yep.
To be honest, I feel like the game against Crystal Palace, away at Crystal Palace, and it doesn't have to make sense to you. That's just my prediction. I feel like it'll be a close one. You know, knowing Man City, you know, I don't watch Man City games. I don't hate watch Man City feel like, oh, they're going to drop points. Like, it's a waste of time. I have too much experience for this, you know. They almost always win. It's just pointless. Like, even if a team goes up 2-0, 3-0, don't get excited, man. Calm down. I'm sure rival fans feel the same thing for Liverpool. I can just imagine from their perspective, they see a team go up and maybe they are watching, they are hoping, you know. We've had some really late winners as well, where they feel like, okay, this time around, yes, finally Liverpool going to drop points and something. You know, you're watching the game, you see someone score, or maybe you're not watching the game, you're out and you have your notifications and just see Darwin Nunez or, I don't know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, that's like, you know, in the 90-something minute, absolutely heartbreaking. So it's same goes for City as well. You know, you don't really watch and hope that they lose, because it's almost always a waste of time, and that's why they are where they are. But I feel like the game against Crystal Palace could be a tricky one.
Yep.
The game against Crystal Palace. Apart from that, goodness, you know, the routine stuff, Tottenham. You know, but yeah, are they going to defy the? Are they going to prove too much to Tottenham and be like, look, whatever we have going on, where this ends up being a high scoring fixture that we don't come out of with a win, you know, put that aside. This, like, literally, I don't know what the game is scheduled for, because it's supposed to, like, it's been postponed, so I don't know if it's the I don't Tottenham think it's game? Gonna be the last game of season. Yeah, I don't quite know when the fixture comes
in. Tottenham are deciding this title because they have Man City on April 20th, they have Arsenal on April 27th, and then they have Liverpool May 4th. That's back to back to back. Tottenham are deciding this title.
That's insane. Yep. That's insane for Tottenham, though, from a Tottenham fan perspective.
It is.
Like, that's very insane, because they're chasing the top four. Literally. And I couldn't... What? That is insane.
But two games at home, they have to bat themselves.
Still, like, these are... Like, basically, you're giving the three best teams in the country to play back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, that's true.
That... That is crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, for Liverpool, I feel like the game away at Fulham would prove to be difficult. Still, you know, football is fine margins. Come on, like, I'm not saying points will exactly be dropped here, but I feel it to be close and tight. So, of course, I hope Liverpool still find a way like they did against Brighton at Anfield. But these are the games that you look at, and I feel like they'll be tight, you know, and we need to take a chances, probably need a little bit of some luck as well here and there, you know, because they will create chances. You know, these sort of things. These are the sort of games where you just have to come out with the result. It doesn't matter 1-0, 2-1. Just make sure you come out with the result, you know.
Yep.
It's going to be tight there. Against United, I feel like Liverpool are going to win. I knew they were going to lose one of the two, and I actually prefer the one they lost. And that was always my thoughts on it. So now they lost this, the FA Cup. I expect them to win in the league, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put logic to it. It's just how I feel about things. The game against Everton, you know, we know how it is. You know, the Merseyside derby, you know, running. Everton are going to play for the nastiest 0-0. You know, we have a forward, so we create loads of chances. We're not clinical. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it's not going to be an easy game, but I think we're going to win. You know, I loved what I saw last season from Liverpool against Everton, even when we're bad. You know, you saw Darwin Nunez, so exciting. You know, so I feel like we have a little bit, like, too much for them.
Yep.
In this exact moment in time. So, yeah, I think it's going to be difficult, but we'll win that. So, personally, I just feel like that game against Fulham is the one I have eyes out for. I think against Tottenham as well, difficult game against Wolves as well, you know. These are difficult games that I feel like Liverpool just edged. The one against Fulham, I'm looking at a draw, you know, which should not be the worst result in the world. In the moment, the fans will complain, they'll moan, they'll be so mad, they'll say this, that, But that is the advantage of being in front, you know. They also have to be perfect as well, you know. These other teams, Arsenal, Man City, the pressure is also on them, yeah.
Personally, I think 7 out of 9 wins for Liverpool wins the league. Because
You're going into a running with City though, but go on.
Do you know why? Because I think already 8 out of 9 will be enough as it stands right now. Even if City win 9 out of 9 and we win 8 out of 9, we win the league.
Arsenal exists though as well. And we're above Arsenal, what, 2 points? I'll come to them. And they're higher on goal difference. Okay, go on.
I'll come to Arsenal.
All right, go on.
I will tell
Arsenal
you.
Arsenal fans, else doesn't rate you, but go on.
I think Arsenal have done a really good job in terms of, they usually do a very good job in 2/3 of the season, especially in the last two years. But it's that final bit, that final.
Which hurdle. Is starting now, you think? Exactly. Or it started already?
It was at this
point. Has it started already or it's starting now?
Yep. It was at this point last year. It was at this point 2 years ago where it went downhill. And I just think Arsenal are also very comfortable in their starting 11. They've had it quite good with injuries. I'm not saying they haven't had injuries. They have. But yeah, they've had their fair share of luck.
Yeah.
To be able to keep the likes of Gabriel, Saliba and Rice as a trio, that foundation has been massive for them. Yeah. You look at City, you look at Liverpool, they've had injuries all over the shop, all over the place. And what I'll commend both of them for is that they're here and they haven't even played their best stuff. Now, I will commend Arsenal massively if they can compete in Europe and compete in the Premier League at the same time. But it's a very difficult thing to do. It's very difficult. They're going to have to rotate.
Yeah, the fixtures come thick and fast.
And when they rotate, will it be of the same quality? Can they get through those games and win them? It's going to be tough. It's going to be really, really tough. But we will see.
Another thing is like, you see, as you said, Liverpool and City haven't played their best football. Whereas Arsenal, since the turn of the year, they were scoring past opponents for fun. It looked like a team playing at their absolutely highest level, at their fluid best, basically. Everything is clicking. Like, it's just they're keeping the clean sheet. Yes, they're putting 4 or 5 past opponents. And it's no longer that again. And as you said, you said that they took 4 points from Liverpool and CH. You see them play their best football. So at the first half of the season, you could say like all three teams were not quite there. And that's why I said, I remember me telling you that Liverpool are going to win this league if anybody catches. Because I said, it's there to be won. Why not? Like, we're gonna win it. And now we're here, which is cool. But the point is that Arsenal were not also, like, none of these three teams had clicked. You know, this was also a time where you had Tottenham fooling people that, like, they had something to offer and they had to race. I don't want to be too harsh on Tottenham. You know, they also had injuries and they couldn't survive. It's, as we can see. But the point is that Arsenal picked up. They did pick up. You know, they did pick up and got into that magical form. They've gotten 4 points over six against Liverpool, against Manchester City.
I mean, it's fair to say.
Blown teams away and they're still not, like, they've not run away with it.
It's fair to say to you that, like, if they manage to maintain this form, like maybe win every game, I think that would be probably one of the best records we've seen in the second half of the season, because what, they would draw one and have won the rest? Like, so the worry is, have they peaked too early and can they maintain it? Because it was only City in the 18-19 season that I'd ever seen that had peaked for so long. It was ridiculous. Like, they just did not drop a point since January. And apart from City away, that would be the only game that Arsenal have dropped points in terms of the league. So it would be an incredible achievement. But anyway, enough about the title race. I want a quick fire. Who wins it to you?
Oh, Liverpool. I stick what I always said all season. Liverpool are winning the Premier League.
Okay. I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree.
Okay. You agree now.
Not based on any logic, just the whole third time's a charm. Like, seriously. Please. Like, Wolves at home for the third time in a title race. It has to come to a win, please. But let's move on. Some other big news we heard this week was Xabi Alonso is staying at Leverkusen.
Yep, yep.
Surprised you?
No, I'm not surprised at all. He's always been a guy who looks to take his time, not in a hurry for. It's almost like he's very planned. Like, he's not carried away by anything and makes moves at his own time. And these are things that people in this industry sometimes fear, because you fear that opportunities might come and go. But when you see someone that does that, it means that the person backs themselves insanely in terms of their talent and knows what they're doing, knows where they're going. You can look at like a talent like an Erling Haaland, for example, and so many others who took a route. Even Jude Bellingham, for example. There's so many players who got attention straight out from when they were doing well in their European clubs, but not not big leagues, European clubs. And they could have made the jump to a big league giant, but they were calm with it. They were not in no hurry. They're like, okay, this is the next step for me. Let me go to a Dortmund. Let me go. You know, there's clubs like this. And I feel like same with Xabi, you know. And when you trust your talent, you're not afraid of these sort of things, you know. And so I feel if he believes in himself, then I have a reason to believe in him, because his move just speaks confidence. You know, if you go to a Bayern, it's almost like it's way easier to win the league. I'm not saying it's very easy to win the league. You have to be a good team who is good enough to just dispatch opponents 95% of the time in the league. That still work, but it's of course a lot easier than what he's done now. And come next season, whatever, like, Leverkusen just don't have the resources or the talent that Bayern have in general. So it's a more difficult job. And for him to stay instead of just go, because you can go to Bayern and, you know, you get your trophies, you know. It's not easy, but it's easier. So basically you can go to somewhere that's easier to win, and, you know, you have your accolades still going up, you have your trophy cabinet count still going up, you know, your trophy count is still going up and things like that. So it reeks of confidence, and I'm all for it. I'm here for it, you know? Yeah.
I'm going to play devil's advocate because I'm the host. So, I have a theory that it's just as much of a risk for him to stay than it is for him to go. Because you take Liverpool, for example, and Liverpool, for one, I will say, first of all, that the Bayern job will come much more often than the Liverpool job. Liverpool 100%. Have had six managers since 1998. To put it into context, Chelsea have had 22. Like,
incredible.
It's insane. So unless whoever at Liverpool does terribly, I think we can safely say that Xabi Alonso will not be managing Liverpool in the near future. I think we can say that.
22, that's mad.
Yeah.
Like, in my head, I'm just counting. Like, you know, like, I know Chelsea had a lot of managers, but 22?
Yeah. I mean, they had three in one season last year? So, and I think 11 of those were since 2011, so, or 2012.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But there's been a bit, there's been repeat managers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mourinho's.
Exactly. Yeah. So are you counting those as?
Oh, yeah.
As
part
of the 22?
Yeah. Because they're different. Yeah, of course, because they're different stages, you know? Different eras. Like Mourinho in 2004 isn't the same as Mourinho.
So Mourinho 2004 start counts as one. Mourinho 2013 counts as two.
Because he returned. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Still very crazy.
I think, yeah, it's still very crazy, of course. I think as regards your question, it's a risk, Els. It's a risk, but not really. Because the thing is, people don't need to understand. That's the thing. Like, even on a very personal level, I look at all I do and stuff like that. Like, people might not understand, but, you know, you have that confidence in yourself. You have that trust. You have that trust of the people around you. You know what you're cooking. And, of course, it's only time before they know what you're cooking, you know. I mean, they can see what he's cooking now, you know, and it's not luck, you know. He knows what he's doing. His players have bought into it. The transfer market was very intentional. And basically, there's a plan which he's very committed to as well, him as a player as well, sorry, him as a coach as well. You know, sometimes players make jumps too early. You know, that's also a thing where it's almost like your development stops. You see Paul Pogba going to Manchester United. Oh my goodness, I was his biggest fan, you know, in the world. And him going to Manchester United is like, you know, you're already on a trajectory. Like, it's like, okay, you have to stay one more season, maybe. Other players as well make a jump a season or too early, you know what I'm saying? And it could also be the same for managers, because the Liverpool job, for example, it's not exactly the same as the Leverkusen job in terms of the profile, in terms of even the pressure, in terms of so much that comes in the job, in terms of the sort of personalities you'll be dealing with. And these are the sort of things that he might not have necessarily developed in his repertoire so far as a manager. So he knows himself the best. He knows where he excels the most. And I feel like together with Leverkusen, of course, the aim will not be to go back-to-back. You know, that cannot be the request of the board. But I'm guessing there would be a lot more. There will be a much more attractive destination this summer for talent, for cheap top talent around the world. And also, maybe they are looking to achieve stability if they could qualify for the Champions League again. So basically, it's almost like he's setting them up real good. It's not just like a title that just comes, it's like, oh, fluke title, and you go. You know, there's a plan with this bunch of players. You know, you like the experienced Granit Xhaka, you know, came, you know, off, like if Granit was at Arsenal, he would still be starting. You know, it's the truth. You know what I'm saying? He was a top player. You know, and he's just like, yeah, I'm not renewing my contract. I'm coming to this. So you can imagine, like, the project that was sold, you get me? And that project is still valid. And that's what people have to respect in terms of him making this jump to stay. Like, there's clearly a project going on there. And to be honest, he doesn't have to leave. Like, I know, like, of course, he loves Liverpool. He's a Liverpool. He played for Liverpool. And a massive part of him is there in that city. But it doesn't have to happen, you know? He could, just like the way, I don't know, Jurgen Klopp, for example, young German manager, Mainz and Dortmund. Like, it didn't have to be that. You know, it could have been Dortmund. It could have been, sorry, Bayern or something. And, you know, but everyone's story is different. You know, if Alonso wins with Leverkusen now, and, like, we don't know what's about to happen. You know, Bayern, their next employment also needs to be very good, because they've made some careless decisions, and it's kind of showing them that they're not invincible. But it's fine. You know what I'm saying? They're not invincible. Sorry. It's fine, because you can't win the league forever. You know, you've won how many in a row now? 10 or something. So it happens. But the truth is that we don't know the future with Leverkusen. There's always a start to anything good. Anything positive always has a start. And talent doesn't always have to go to the same. Like, it makes it more boring, you know. In like, for example, if you see the Serie A in the 90s and early 2000s, you had like the likes of Crespo, Totti, Del Piero, like all these guys, and Zaghi, like everyone playing for different clubs. It's almost like 8-9 different clubs having like some of the absolutely best footballers in the world in the same league. You don't see it again, you know. For example, in the La Liga, even when they had the best players in the world, it's shared amongst two clubs. So I feel it's a good thing for football if Xabi Alonso maybe establishing himself as a top manager is staying at Leverkusen. Then you have an extra top club in Germany.
Just my worry always for that league is Bayern pinching talent from these teams and leaving it as, you know, how we see every single year, just separating the gap further and further. I think the way to improve that league, it can't just be the Leverkusens. I welcome it because it's been almost like another team that's challenged. But we need the likes of Leipzig and Dortmund to step up as well. Like, in order to kind of make that league a bit more competitive. Because otherwise, it will turn into what we've seen for years. It will be, again, Bayern pinching the top talent. And it will go back into Bayern winning it for 5 years in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
So it you needs can't, to
like,
be...
As a Dortmund, especially, can't let that be happening.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be a case of, you know, we have 2, 3, 4 teams where talent can go and we don't have to move to the top team. We don't have to move to the top team to compete in Europe. Yeah. And... to be honest, I hear it. Listen, for Xabi, I respect it. He's doing what's best for him. He's backing his talent. He believes the opportunity will come around. Good for him. Good for him. But let's move on to England. The lovely England that win nothing ever. Well, the men's team, man. Can I say. The women's team did that.
Like, to be fair, okay.
I would say, let me just build it up a bit. So obviously we just had almost the warm-ups before the main warm-ups. So we just had the pointless international break that everyone hates in March, where it was almost your final opportunity to test a couple of players and kind of before the main European squad or the Euro squad.
But I feel like these fixtures were more like to give confidence in the fans. You know,
well, make the
fans
have confidence in you. England.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah, I know, but I mean, like, it's just for like, I thought it. Yeah, 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 it did. But I'm just saying, like, exactly, because if, for example, maybe England, like, did really well and blitz, like, what, Brazil and Belgium.
Brazil, who then also have injury issues, by the way.
Yeah.
And Belgium, who are not...
like,
wait, Kevin De Bruyne
You call the friendlies meaningless. And so, I agree with that. I wanted to stay as that. Yeah. Yeah, I know there was injuries on both sides. Mm-hmm. I know. But I'm saying, like... how do I say this? Like, I'm just like, backing your point as to, like, they're actually meaningless. Because I don't think this results... of course, there's doubts hanging over Southgate, blah, 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 blah. Come on. If let's say this results went in people's favour. This is the problem with football analysis. Is people are too reactionary. People are actually going to be like, oh, it's coming home. We beat Brazil. And do you get my point? So at the end of the day, them beating these teams doesn't actually or wouldn't have done anything for their chances in the Euros. But of course, the public perception now is more negative. That's all these games did. But I don't think he actually did anything in terms of their chances before these games and after still the same. You know what I'm saying? But of course, it's about the discussions in the media about them, the perception, the confidence the fans have in you, your nation, blah, blah, blah. That's what these games did. And of course, a negative effect it caused, yeah.
To be honest, I think it was a bit of a blessing in disguise for England because it took their captain out of the way. Because you never know. Like, Harry Kane, he picks up these weird injuries with his ankle every year. And you just never know, he could miss a game. And you're looking at the squad and you're thinking, okay, Kane's out. Who's scoring our goals? And where are the...
Saka's out as well.
Saka's out. Who's scoring our goals? Who's creating our chances? And who's defending? Because some of the defending I saw at Wembley, yeah, England are going to be in trouble. The likes of France, the likes of Portugal's forward line, they have to sort that out immediately, because we know Stones and Walker are like shoo-ins to start, but I have no idea who England are going to play as a left-back, and I have no idea who they're going to partner next to Stones, because both, whoever they pick, I don't know what your opinion is on it, I don't think it's going to be the best for the position. I think it's going to be who Southgate has gone for in the past, which is probably the likes of Maguire and Chilwell, which neither
on the left side
any kind of form. Yep. Left so, side so is in trouble.
So, yeah. The thing is, so just to put it plainly, England has the resources and the juices to actually be so solid and go on to win it all on the continental or even the world stage, to be honest. Guys like Chilwell, of course, you have, I mean, Shaw will hope to be ready and not have any setbacks and be there. So I think if Luke Shaw is fit, he plays, it's not like he's a world beater or anything, but I guess he has the confidence of the manager and a lot of England fans as well. England has so many players that could possibly do so. You have Rashford, you know, who could play on that wing. You have a lot of people making lineups without Rashford in there, you know. To be honest, you also, like, I mean, Raheem Sterling, since the turn of the year, has not exactly been very good, but, and he's not going to get called up, of course, but,
no.
You know, as with Harry Maguire, who Southgate just chooses to totally ignore whatever happens in his club side, and just be like, yeah, I don't care, I know. I feel like Sterling should get that same treatment, 100%. Sterling is a performer for England.
I think something
happened. Still Southgate is us.
Yeah, I think something happened between them. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to why Sterling was just suddenly dropped out of the squad when the likes of Henderson, when the likes of Maguire are in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably for lesser reasons, because Sterling is still playing consistently for club. But I just want to touch quickly before we end this England discussion, because it's depressing and boring, and I don't think they will win the Euros. But don't worry, we'll come on to the Euros. We'll have a Euro special before. But just that midfield, because the midfield is where the whole debate is.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We know Bellingham and Rice are for sure going to start.
Yeah.
Who do England need to almost complement those two? Because you saw Kobbie Mainoo, who came in, didn't do any harm to his case, probably one of the best players against Belgium. Young player. But is it sensible to go into a tournament with an 18-year-old starting? I'm not so sure. But then your options are Conor Gallagher, Calvin Phillips, who didn't even get called up. Like, you're really scratching your head. So what do you think is the solution to that problem?
Well, what I think the solution is this. Firstly, Jude Bellingham has to drop back. So if you play like a 4-2-3-1, you know, like Southgate does quite a few times or a lot, Jude Bellingham has to drop back just simply because this guy is one of the best footballers in the world, unarguably. And he will still be there if you take away the striker numbers he's put up this season. Quite frankly, you know, I always talk about how, like, he's the best player I've ever seen with my eyes. And if you watch Bellingham, honestly, from a pure heart, you're truthful to yourself. What a player. He's very hardworking. He does the right thing on the ball every time. Like, he has everything, you know. He's a proper midfield player. And even though his burst on the counter-attack, as I saw in England, with England in the last tournament in the World Cup, that was massive. It was very, very massive, you know. Bellingham was such... Well, he really shone in that tournament, you know. I expect that from him. I feel what Southgate has to do, to be very honest with you, he should be very honest with himself and ask himself, who are my best players? Because as a coach, he's tried it all in terms of, I like this guy, I'm sticking with this guy, I'm sticking with that guy. That is all well and good as a coach. Like, it's your job. It's you have that authority and power, and you can do it. No one's going to punish you for it. However, if certain things don't work, you should be able to, like, know when to throw in the towel, put your hands in the air, and be like, you know what? Let me actually play the players who are probably the best in their positions. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm just giving it off the top of my head, right? Let's say you have a 14 and a 10 between those half spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Bellingham and Rice behind him. You have Saka on the left. You have Kane up front. And Rashford on the left. Rashford has not been in great form. Of course, he hasn't been, but man, what are the options? You know what I'm saying?
For real, unless England do like a front two with Tony or something. Yeah, you're right.
What are the options? You know?
And
the situation at right back.
Is there a case for Cole Palmer getting a start, being in very good form this season?
Yeah, well, and this is another thing as well. Like, you know, with tournaments, especially international tournaments, the substitutes are so important, and it's up to the coach to know when to use them and to be brave. You know, you have to be brave, especially in this situation. Someone like a Cole Palmer sort of player where you've looked at how he's concerned. I mean, he's a good player. Like, I keep saying this, I know a lot of people have been introduced to him this season, but a lot of people also have known him for the past, I would say, two seasons as well, you know, playing with the England unders and also Man City in the cup. Like, you can see that, okay, this is a really good football player, you know what I'm saying? So it's not all, like, as surprising that maybe a lot of people would describe it. Mm-hmm. So even though he's new on the block, like, it's not just sudden, you know, it was not some scrub that just, you get what I'm saying? We've seen it consistently that, oh, he's a good player. He's constantly improving as well. Brilliant job under Mauricio Pochettino. He's the sort of player that, you know, he finishes the season, how he's going on week in, week out. I'm shouldering that main man responsibility for Chelsea, and come the Euros, it's a very good season for him domestically in the Premier League. Just based on his output that this season, you know that, oh, he's meant to be in the conversation. I'm very okay with him not starting, but what the coach has to do is you cannot let certain caliber of players rot on the bench when you struggle to create, when you're struggling for a goal, when they can do it. It's the same thing that happens with Trent in this tournament. It makes no sense. Like, I don't have to agree with your decisions in terms of, oh, I'm going to start this guy, start that guy. But for example, let's say Rashford or Saka or Foden, they're struggling badly, and you just don't do anything about it. You just leave a Cole Palmer on the bench. That's not good coaching, because it's a very high quality as well and can do things for you. Yeah.
I think England's problem is they have talent concentrated in a few positions, if you get what I mean. So they have a lot of talent at right back. They have a lot of talent in that kind of 10. And I would say, like, the forward line. But when it comes to, like, centre-backs, left-backs, maybe an 8, they're really, you're struggling. And I think that those positions are so key. Even the
But that's what Bellingham is, though. He's an eight.
That's true, but we don't play him as an eight. England don't play him as an eight because he's so good in so many positions that we feel like we almost need to give him like some kind of free role. So I think, and I don't think that's the wrong thing to do. But if we're going to do that, we need another eight beside him. And I cannot believe Curtis Jones, how little is being spoken about him. Because he is so much the perfect eight for England. He is the perfect eight for England. But I don't think he'll even see the... I don't even think he'll go, which is such a shame. But I think he could be a real option. Look how well he did for the England under-21s. But that is Southgate's problem to answer. So let's move on to actually an England midfielder that didn't get called up, Calvin Phillips. So we saw a video going, doing the rounds on Twitter of him sticking his middle finger up at a fan. And first of all, we can't condone this behaviour because he's a role model. He should know better. Kids look up to him. But also, I feel bad for him. I feel really bad for him because he's gone from going to major tournaments, international tournaments, starting, playing really well, to this. Tell me about Calvin Phillips. Tell me what he should do next.
So I feel like, of course, he's got friends in the West Ham setup who are also in the England setup. He's also got friends in the England setup who play for other teams. And I feel like all these guys will be in his phone. I feel like everyone around him will be trying to get him to just focus and take it slowly and just keep going. Because like sometimes when the noise is loudest, if you dial into it, you could just get lost in it. You know, and when I mean noise, I mean positive or negative. Now it's negative noise for Calvin Phillips. Like, the move to West Ham was, in my opinion, a brave one, a good one, you know. Like, you want to play football, but it hasn't gone the way you wanted. It doesn't mean anything. Like, there's people that come out to say, oh, you're so trash, you're this footballer kind of footballer, because maybe a move hasn't gone the way you wanted it to, or your first season hasn't gone well. Like, there's players who bounce back, players who have fantastic seasons, they're followed by bad seasons and bounce back. Like, your story isn't their story. So I feel, for him personally, of course he believes in his ability and he just knows that that's all I have to do. Like, if that's not West Ham, that's fine. Not all loan spells work, by the way. You know, you see players being loaned out here and they look terrible and maybe they go back to their parent club and even perform, or they go out to another club and then you get, it's just what it is. So he just has to know that his story has not been, like, it's not finished yet. It's not close to finished. He still has a lot of time on his side and he just has to focus. You know, like, just get right. Just be Calvin Phillips. You know, the Calvin Phillips that he knows he can be, the one that got him like on the England squad, the one that made him get the Man City move. You know, you just have to do that again. Find that form, and that's just it. You know, I don't know how much chances he'll be given. You know, this sort of things. All sort of things differ. Mm. But I mean, on a very personal level, in terms of where he says he should be at, I feel that's where it should. And I feel that's where it is anyway. Like, he's a pro. Like, this is what it is. You know, it's just trying to get there again. And of course, if that opportunity comes, either at West Ham or another club, then yeah, be ready to show it.
I think the whole gesture thing was just almost a boiling point of the frustration he probably has at himself, because he just knows it's not going as he planned. I mean, I feel like little moments, I would say little things have been big moments in his loan move. Well, I think his first touch, he gave away a penalty. And it just, from there, it... And then I think his second or third game, he got sent off. It's just been like thing after thing after thing after thing. I just think he needs to settle a bit. I think he needs an arm around him. He's a quality player. West Ham can do with someone of that talent. It's just he needs to relax and kind of just, as you said, be who he is. And I'm sure he'll find his way. And you never know, if he performs really well, I think he can see himself in that Euro squad. But slightly moving sideways about players and psychology. Injury-prone players. So we often kind of make jokes and call players out for being injury-prone. But there's a real dark side to it, because that whole loneliness, training on your own, not being with a squad, like sometimes you barely see these players around. You think, are they actually okay? Like I think I asked you a couple of weeks ago, I wonder if Thiago's okay, yeah, because I've hardly seen the guy. Like, I feel so bad for him. I mean, 8 minutes and a whole year of recovery done.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine exactly how that is for him? And
I can't.
I don't know. Like, you play football, T. You love football. What would it be like? Yeah. Or give us some insight as somebody who breathes football. What would it be like to have that very thing that you kind of live for, that's your job, being separated from you because you physically cannot do it?
Okay. First of all, like, you don't need to say it's very difficult. Firstly, on a physical level, you're going through pain daily. So it's like just you're walking or you're climbing up the stairs. This sort of things hurt. So that means that you have a constant reminder, like your everyday little, just living at the moment is painful physically, like factually, right? First things first. Now, second is, you love this thing so much. And I feel like this is what people don't really know about footballers. For example, I'm not playing pro football at the moment. To play football, I have to pay money. I play football so many times a week. So, and this is the attitude of the average footballer. So they would still play football every single week, even if we're not earning this money.
Mm.
It's you, like, you love it. Like, you love it. It's a passion. You know, you're crazy over it, you know. So it's also very difficult. In 2022, I injured my meniscus. I couldn't play much. Mm. It's difficult. It's very difficult. You know, very, 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 very difficult. Like, it affects your moods because it's your escape. It's so difficult not to do the thing you love, and it's almost like you have to recalibrate your psyche and your life. It's almost like, yeah, I have to get this feeling from something else. So, of course, a lot of these players have, like, families and things like that, and it's just trying to, like, see the glass as half full rather than half empty and say that, oh, I now get to spend more time with my wife or my daughters or my sons, you know, and which is also a nice thing. So it's this sort of things that get them by. But it's incredibly difficult because you're out, you have aspirations, you also want to help your team. It's also painful because maybe you're such a main player in the team and you can see that they need you. Everyone knows they need your services. Maybe it's just young players without a lot of experience that are trying to fill in there. And it's like, you see your team suffer because you know they are. There's nothing you want more than to be there on the pitch to help them. And you work so hard to come back. And then when you come back, for you to get injured again, it's almost like, you suffer every day of your life. You're saving so much money because you want to buy a house.
Mm.
After maybe 5 years of saving, just when you're about to buy a house and you go to the bank to get the money, and maybe on your way to meet the real estate agent, someone just comes and steals it.
Yeah. No.
Imagine how you feel in that. It's like,
yeah,
you've worked so hard, like you've suffered. Yeah. Because the process to even get back from an injury successfully is difficult. The rehabilitation, like, it's actually difficult. It takes courage. You have to fight through the pain. You have to just keep. It's a lot of hard work to actually get back. And then you do all of that. And then it's just, again, and it's like, you have to do that thing again. You have to do it again. And lastly, another thing is, it also somehow affects your form because, you know, you stop trusting your body. That's a big thing in football, people don't know. Like, especially players who, for example, have muscle injuries. How do you expect them to want to sprint? How do you expect them to want to change direction confidently? And this lack of confidence affects your ability. So, like, it's okay to maybe not rate a player as highly or so because they have injury problems, but I quite feel like directly insulting players who are going through injury is very insensitive, because if anyone needs your support as quote unquote supporters that we all call ourselves supporters, you know, it's these players more than even the one that they actually, because they're the ones suffering. They are physically in pain and their whole world is taken away from them, you know, and they are working so hard to be able to get back. So it's, like, call it, say I don't rate this player because he's always injured. That's fair. It's your, like, that's like, you're just being critical. But to hurl abuse at a player who is suffering, if you look at it from that angle, it's quite insensitive.
Yeah, you can't kill him for it. And I just thought, like, I couldn't imagine doing something since I was, like, I'd be able to walk. Because that's, realistically, that's when a lot of these players started kicking a ball. And being so good at something that it becomes your identity and you actually can't do the very thing that you live for. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. But let's not end the pod on a miserable note. Let's celebrate everyone.
Okay.
So, T, let me ask you, who's the greatest injury-prone player that you've seen of all time?
Well, first of all, I don't know. Like, I mean, yeah. Messi was looking to be injury prone in his early stages, but, you know, they all got all that fixed up.
Yeah, he does not count.
You know, diet changes.
Messi does not count.
Yeah, no, he doesn't count. I'm just saying, yeah. And like, it's so surprising and inspiring all he could survive. Like, I'm saying, early Messi and... then you now look at how, to be honest, there's a lot of rumors also what Barcelona did, his diet, this, that changed, you know. But, I mean, as someone from the outside, I can't speak as facts, but basically, yeah. He was basically turned into a guy who could take, he could even step on his head and he just gets back right up. But, I think I'm going to have to go with Ronaldo de Lima.
Fair.
I feel like all things put together, and you look at what he's achieved, what he achieved with an injury-prone career, a very injury-ridden career, then, I don't know, the sky isn't even the limit to think of what he could possibly... And I've just spoken about all the limitations that injuries put on you. It's not only about the time you took away from him. That's even the least of it, you know, and I'm not going to go over it again. But yeah, when you look at all like injuries are taking for him, and everything involved, and he's still able to achieve that, and then the sky is not even the limit to what he could have achieved, if you're just trying to imagine, if he didn't have injuries. What about you, Els? What are you going for?
So, I had two answers. So, Ronaldo was my logical answer for all the reasons you explained.
Yeah.
But can you guess who
you went for? Daniel Sturridge?
No. It is a Liverpool player, but it's not Daniel Sturridge.
It is a Liverpool player.
Mm-hmm.
Thiago?
No.
Lallana?
No. I feel like people are going to laugh at my answer now.
Okay, no, it's fine.
My heart will always go to...
Wait, are you about to say... Were you about to say, I should guess?
No, I'm about to say. My heart always wanders. Mind always wanders.
I want to guess.
Okay, go. You should know.
Can you give me a clue?
He's one of my favourite players. He's still at the club. He's injured.
Alisson, no.
It's not Alisson.
Konate?
No. Oh, people have just forgotten about him.
He's still at the club and he's injured.
Yeah. A bad injury.
A bad one?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, Els, come on.
Yeah.
This is your pick.
T. Because my mind always goes to what heights could Joel Matip have reached if he was not injury prone? I tell you, That
oh, he's
version,
an excellent top-class defender. Yeah, absolutely top-class.
That version of Joel Matip that we saw that was injury-free in 18-19 was exceptional. It was ridiculous. Because remember, this is a man who played in Liverpool's high line and wasn't very quick. He was just so intelligent, excellent on the ball. He was ridiculous. Even in that, was it the 2021 season when we had all those injuries and how he held the fort together before he got injured again? Like, it upsets me. It upsets me. So, yes, my answer, people, is Ronaldo, by the way. But my mind always goes to how great of a defender could Joel Matip have been if he just stayed fit? For real. Like, some of the performances I saw. Because even when he was injured, and he came back, it didn't even take him a long time to kind of get into the rhythm. He was good. I mean, he's slowing down now, of course. But, damn. Yeah. I miss him, and he'll probably leave the club in the summer. But, damn. What a defender. Gave me some of the best memories I've seen in football. So, yeah.
100%.
Anyway, T, I'm the positive one of the week. So I get the last bus stop while you get the flop of the week, I would say.
Okay. Come on.
So my last bus stop pick is Alexis McAllister. For very obvious reasons.
That's fair. Yeah,
for very obvious reasons. He just absolutely ran the show against the club that he came from, basically. Massive, massive game for Liverpool, and he shone so brightly. Some of the passes, some of the defence-splitting passes, exceptional. And by the way, the quality of Liverpool's winner, Szoboszlai to McAllister to Salah, that was football. That was football. And
Pure football
that we were so in a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, that was pure football. And a very worthy man of the match performance. And last bus stop shout. Tell us, who's the flop of the week?
Erik ten Hag.
No.
I was gonna go with Thomas Tuchel because it was
the hideous
to be honest, right? It is like, I mean, Bayer are 13 points clear now. If they won 10 points, like, to be honest, I feel like Bayern, they're very messed up. Like, you get what I'm saying? They're very messed up. Like, even if they won this game, like, of course, mathematically, their chances are higher, but you get what I'm saying? Like,
does Tuchel have hair?
Not really.
He always wears a hat.
Yeah.
Does he have it? Okay. I wanted to say the bald twins, but he has hair. Okay.
Yeah, continue. He has hair, but he's balding in patches, if you want to know. Yeah.
That's why he wears his
hair. But he has hair.
Exclusive from Tam.
Anyway, yeah. But the performance that Man United put at Brentford is just, that's one of the most dominant performances. Like, even Manchester City versus Sheffield, Manchester City versus Luton, wasn't producing set in. Like, it's just, to be fair, as a Man United, if you're a Man United fan, you're just going to be like, like, what on earth is this? Are United and Ten Hag and all of them should be very, very happy they came out with a point, because not many teams in world football can put up that performance and get anything from there. So this is, of course, very personal, and you can disagree with me, but personally, that's just where I felt disappointed with him the most. And of course, like, the team was very bad. So who else to blame than the manager? You know, I can't pick on one player in this one. Yeah.
Tanner, to close this episode, you owe me a question. Remember last time I asked him about, I tested him on his loyalty as an Igbo man on how much football versus money. And money won, of course.
Oh, man. It has to, Ella.
Your culture shone through. It shone through.
Yeah, of course. Like, let's not play here. Ego Dimba. One is important.
Question.
Okay, Ella. For you, choose one. Suarez never left the club. Or Liverpool never sold Coutinho. And yeah, you know, like the sadness that followed that. By the way, let me rephrase. Liverpool wins the league in 2014. By the way, sorry, I know. Like Liverpool wins the league in 2014. Suarez never leaves, and yeah. Which are you choosing?
Okay, so Liverpool win the league in 2014, and Suarez never leaves. Versus basically what happened now.
Yeah.
Oh, you're asking me. I don't think.
By the way, think of the ripple effects of,
I'm thinking. But for me, I don't think anything can be above my captain, Stevie G, winning the Premier League. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so because that's the only thing that pains me. Because that man deserved that. For literally carrying this club on his back for how many years? Since he was, I don't know, 18, 19? Like, well, not 18, 19, like, since he started coming into the first team, but, like, yeah, nothing beats that. No, I don't think I would get a greater joy than to see Steven Gerrard lift the Premier League title. So, as much as I love these players, your Salahs, your Virgils, your Alissons, your Joel Matips, but yeah, Stevie G, Premier League, nothing will ever top that. Even thinking about that, like I remember the running in 2014, and I promise you, I've never had a more desperate need to win than that. Even all the title races that we've been in, never to that level, because I wanted so badly for Gerrard to win, so badly. Yeah.
Unfortunate.
That's a hard one, but my loyalty to Gerrard. Yeah, he's my goat. So yeah.
Yeah, fair's Earl's fair's, to be honest.
What would you pick though? What would you pick?
Oh la la. No, I'm not answering. It's not your turn to ask me a question. You can ask me next week.
That's such a cop-out, because I answered last week and I said, money is no object to my decisions. Remember?
No, I don't.
Yes, and you said, oh, we'll discuss it off air, because you couldn't believe that I would pick how much I would refuse how much money to support Man United. No exactly. Money in the world, by the way, still.
Please, collect the 100 million. Please, I beg you, leave football alone. Leave that share with me, please. It's not important. It's not that important. At the end of the day, football is entertainment. You know, you cannot be refusing certain amounts of money else.
I can. My happiness and joy is more important.
You would find other ones.
Answer the question. Stop dodging.
Oh, come on. It's difficult. You know what? With the logic you presented, like, yeah, it's one that hurt that Stevie G didn't win it. To be honest, it's unfortunate that it's actually all over now, and you can't even get it back. Nothing is like done. Yeah. However, you know, like, in terms of, I feel like the club, goodness me, but Suarez was about the best footballer in the world as well, retaining that kind of talent. Like, but I also don't even trust, for example, what like Rodgers and what he was planning to do, and I don't know how would have probably built on that success. And it's difficult, Ella. I don't have anything in my head, if I'm being honest with you. I'm just at a blank. But for the sake of how you explained it so beautifully, and you know, giving the Stevie G points, you know, and even taking it totally away from Luis Suarez, because that's even who was about.
It's so funny that I didn't even mention that guy.
I would have to, have to go with that.
Yeah. Sorry. As soon as he said 2014, I was like, Gerrard's still playing. Yeah. That's what my mind went to. But anyway, guys, thank you for listening to another episode of Last Bus Stop. We yep. have been your guests, hosts, people, fam, elves, and
Tana.
Anything else you want to say, Tana?
Yeah, yeah. Do not forget to like, share, and subscribe. Also, rate the podcast. I keep telling you guys this because that's what tells the algorithm that this is the absolute best football podcast, which it is. So please make sure you subscribe and you rate it and like. And if you're feeling very generous in the spirit of Easter and the spirit of Ramadan, share. Yeah, that's all from me, Ella.
Absolutely. Till next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.
The Tana Talk Soccer Podcast, the number one.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.